morning and welcome to Daybreak. As always, I'm Mark Coxon and I'm here with your host, Jared Hillman. How are you, Jared?
Featured host today.
You are the featured host for sure. It's almost like Mass. You know, at Mass, there's always a featured host, but you eat it. So that's a little different.
That is true. You can abstain, can't you? You cannot take. Right? You can. If I'm thinking of church correctly, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So exactly. you're not an abstainer.
No.
That's fine. We don't have to talk about religion. It's okay. We can move on. How was your week?
Hey, my week was awesome. You know, I feel like it's been a long time. We skipped last week.
We did skip last week. Yeah.
You were busy.
Yeah, it's almost. I was busy, man. Yeah.
Because you. You've been doing something.
We got a lot going on. Yes. I can't disclose too much.
Okay. I won't push you then.
But all I can say is that whatever it is that I'm doing, as most things right now, the pandemic is not making it easier. That's all I'll say. If that gives you any hint, whatever it is that I'm doing, the pandemic is not making it easier.
Yeah, an ambiguous reference.
Very, very narrow.
To the pandemic making an activity more difficult than it should be.
Yeah.
In the time that you're trying to perform it.
That's right. Yeah. That's okay. It gave us time to regroup and get an amazing guest on today. We haven't had a guest in a while either.
You know what? That's true. It's just been you and I talking to each other, which must be boring the hell out of whoever's been listening to us. We had a chance to get a guest on today.
Yep.
We actually have a guest for next week too. We have two guests lined up, Jared. Two people. I'm telling
you, 2021 is going to be our year.
It's going to be the year of two guests in 2021.
That's right. Yeah.
And we're just doing it all in the beginning, just like all at once. Two weeks in a row, and then we're out.
Yeah. Well,
to be honest, I like having guests on. You know, my quick start, you know, when we talk about Kobe Index and me being a quick start 9, and I think you being a quick start 8, aren't you an 8?
7. I'm a 7.
You're a 7. Yeah. My quick start is what hurts me with guests.
Because I'm just a 9. Yeah.
Pre-planning is just, you know, I just want to wake up and talk. That's all.
I know.
I don't want to have to send out invites and, you know, click schedule meeting and actually have to type an email in. That's a lot of work.
there's also a lot of pressure on the guests, right? Because we don't plan much and we don't give it an agenda, we kind of just leave it up to guests to be insightful. And if they're not, it's kind of their own fault.
And you know what? Every single one has been. So I'm really hoping that, you know, who we call today doesn't, you know, drop the ball. That's all I'm saying.
That would be embarrassing.
Well, no, you know, I'm excited. I'm excited because we have today we're going to call Patrick Wipke. And interesting fact about Patrick Wipke, if you let spell check spell his name, he's Patrick Whiskey. So
yes,
just saying, that's what happened to me.
That was the interesting fact.
That was the one. No. Okay. So here's another interesting fact. We'll have to ask him about Patrick's Twitter handle is the Duke of Music. Very, very, very interesting. I don't know where that comes from, but every time I see it, I actually think of Gene Hackman in The Unforgiven saying the Duck of Death. He's the Duck of Death. So I think we should call Patrick the Duck of Music. I think that should be his like honorary title.
I know where it comes from, but let's bring him on and then we get into who is the Duke of Music.
Well, I lost my iPhone, so I'm gonna have to use like my old Motorola flip phone to call him. So bear with me as I get it going here.
BlackBerries are making a comeback, by the way. You could
supposedly they're looking for like a region. I saw they're looking for like a regional sales manager because I get like LinkedIn job weird random job alerts on LinkedIn every once in a while. I'm like, wow. I don't know if I'd attach my. I could raise my flag on that sinking ship.
There are not many Canadian empires, but BlackBerry.
Hey, you know, they're still around somehow. because nobody's ever going to be able to go away from their physical keyboard, Jared. Nobody will ever accept a touchscreen keyboard. Just telling you. iPhone is still on the you know, inevitable downslope because it doesn't have the physical keyboard.
Yeah, the physical keyboard, it changed the opportunities that everyone thought about, you know?
Yeah.
And now that they don't have it.
I know.
You know, they're lost.
They're craving it. All right, here we go. Here we go. I'm dialing. Patrick.
What's happening?
Hey, sorry to call you so early in the morning. I know we talked a little about it, but you're still okay to talk today?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. Jared's here.
Hi, Jared.
As always, you can't see him because of course this isn't a video call. It's just an audio podcast. But Jared is here.
Yes.
Yeah. He's braving the great white north. Now I feel a little bad. I feel a little guilty that hoodie weather in my dining room is when it's 55 degrees outside.
I think it was Megan Dutta from Future there. She had texted me yesterday and she said, "Oh, we're having a snowstorm," and I just sent back a text. My text reply was "snowstorm" in quotations. And then she had to add more, right? Because I was like, "Oh, I'm sure you are. I'm sure you are."
Yeah. And she's in Chicago, where you can actually have a snowstorm.
Yeah,
right?
they did get a little bit of snow, I suppose. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, where are you based out of, Patrick?
I'm out of South Jersey, right outside of Philly.
Okay, so you can get snow there too.
Yeah, we can get some snow. I mean, it's actually been a pretty dry winter the past couple of winters, but I did take my kids skiing last weekend, so they saw snow, so that was good.
That's awesome. Does the river there, does that kind of keep things a little more temperate? I mean, I know here the water, you know, being 15 miles from the ocean, that keeps things from just ever getting super cold, but does the river help or does it?
It does a little bit. I mean, it seems like every year it gets milder and milder from just the overall snow perspective, you know, but I'm okay with it because I don't like shoveling it.
Yeah, I don't blame you, man. I always say, you know, when I lived in Northern Idaho when I was a kid. So up in the panhandle near Alberta, Canada, near Jared's countrymen in Alberta. And yeah. So I used to get, you know, 4 or 5 feet of snow in the front yard and it would be, you know, negative 10, negative 20 some days. It was pretty cold up there. But I always joke, like, I loved it. I mean, but I was 8, you know, I didn't have to scrape windshield, shovel snow. Like the heater was on in the car when I got in. My dad had already been out there doing the hard work, you know? So I'm sure if I had made it to being a teenager there, I would have been hating life because my dad is not one to spare us chores for sure.
That's right.
So Patrick, you're with, I'm going to take you into why you're here. So yeah, you're with USAV.
That's correct.
And according to your wallpaper, it's a division of PSA.
That's right.
So can you give us a summary or dive into that? Who is USAV? And then just explain the relationship to PSA, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. So USAV Group was founded 20 or so years ago. And it was founded on kind of two principles. One being a buying group to bring together some of the small to mid-size pro AV integrators and kind of pool their spend and help them compete with some of the larger guys in the market. It was also a place to share best practices, help each other grow from a company perspective and, you know, hey, I'm having this problem. Has anybody else in the group had the same problem and how did you deal with it? That type of thing. And then finally, it was also a way to have a partner network. So if a company in LA, say, has a client that has an office in Philadelphia, there's a partner, USAV partner in Philadelphia that can help, you know, whether it's take the whole project and run with it, or hey, I need some extra guys for some, you know, some couple hours for some labor, whatever the case may be. It was, that network was there to help those integrators, you know, come together and help each other grow, essentially.
Right. Is that pretty traditional of a buying group? Like the whole networking portion, the development, the growth portion, is that a traditional role of a buying group?
Typically, no. And to be honest, that's kind of what our members actually have more. You know, we talk to them all the time about the rebates and you know, the buying discounts and stuff, but that's actually second, you know, in their top two of why they're part of the group. The top reason is because of that information sharing, the roundtables, the conversations, you know, helping their businesses grow organically and helping, you know, them solve problems and grow is really the main reason a lot of people are a part of the group. Obviously the buying aspect is huge, but it's really not the number one reason that they are part of the group.
Yeah, I know with it's very interesting because that we had, you know, when I was in another business, we were part of a buying group and it was much more just about achieving the discount levels on products. So, you know, as a smaller company, like you said, as smaller companies, a lot of no matter what business you're in out there, I'm sure you are buying groups across many different industries, Jared, Patrick and I happen to work in technology, but this isn't very specific to that. You know, there's tiered pricing, and depending on the quantities that you buy over the course of the year, you can get greater discounts. And you know, we would join a buying group, just like you said. We were a small regional company, and it allowed us to buy at that deeper discount through the buying group without, you know, having to be the size of organization that would normally get that kind of pricing. So it did help us be very competitive, but they weren't really helping us in the way you're talking about, Patrick, which is, you know, connecting the dots between us and other members or between us and that market intelligence that sometimes you guys see. So the question I have for you, and maybe you can answer it, maybe you can't, put you on the spot a little bit, is that what I've found is that, you know, some people join a buying group for what it can give to them, but come very cautious about what they share, right? So even though we're talking about maybe companies that don't overlap too much, you know, Jared and I share a lot of data with each other because he's in Saskatchewan and I'm in California and we never overlap anyway. So there's no, I guess there's no fear or hesitation that the information sharing is actually going to hurt, you know, your business. How do you cultivate a group of people with a similar mindset that don't think about, I guess, the potential downside of that sharing first and really, you know, come with that heart to share and reciprocate, you know, as opposed to just sit and listen and take from the group? Do you guys do anything special to kind of build a community where people feel, you know, I guess more comfortable sharing with each other?
It's a really great question because, you know, like I said, when it was founded 20 years ago, I mean, there was a bunch of years in that early stages where there was a lot more exclusivity and territories, you know, and they tried to not have competitors in the room at all, to, you know, very much so, to the point where they were throwing up, you know, P&L sheets and comparing them with different members because there was nobody even close in the regions to even worry about any of that stuff. As time has gone on, it's gotten a lot less of that. And that's partly because of, you know, companies expanding, mergers and acquisitions, all of that has kind of changed the landscape a little bit. So that exclusivity isn't there as much. I mean, there are, you know, NDAs in place and everything. And, you know, since it kind of started with that culture, it kept going a little bit, but it has been a little bit less of, you know, here's my P&L statement, but more of what are you guys doing, you know, with this market segment, or how are you growing this vertical, or what are you doing with you know, compensation for biz dev, you know, that those type of things are still being shared. I would say a lot less in a big group setting, but more in like onesie, twosie, three little breakout sessions, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Particularly with nobody that's even close in proximity from a, you know, a market segment. But just having that whole network to be able to call on, even if you're not in the room together, hey, you know, I'm going to call my friend in Pittsburgh because I know I can bounce some ideas off of him and I'm in LA. So we're never going to, you know, share the same clients. So I think, you know, as when we're together as a group, that share has been throttled back a little bit and it is a little bit different. But as a whole, we are still very much, you know, helping each other grow, because, you know, what is that saying? The a rising tide floats all boats.
Yeah. Well, I've always been of that mindset myself. And, you know, I write a lot and I do a lot of things on the side. And people had asked me in the past, you know, like you give a lot of advice to people, like on things that maybe they should be talking about with clients or different things. They're like, aren't you afraid that's going to be used against you? And so, like, number one, I've always had that, you know, hey, if we raise a bar in the industry, that's never a bad thing. But number two, honestly, like, human nature is that most people don't change too much over the course of time. So I figure if, you know, 150 people read what I wrote and 10 of them try it, like two of them actually keep doing it. You know, it's like, such a small percentage of people that, like, they hear your advice, they think it's good, they start to try it, change is hard. They say, well, this isn't working after a week and a half. And they just go back to what they were used to doing before anyway. So it doesn't really, like, long-term, it doesn't hurt me. And if those two people do get something out of it, you know, God bless them for being, you know, for being a go-getter and being determined and persistent in trying something new.
Exactly. You know? And I think human nature is also people want to help people. I mean, just in general, people like to help, you know, yeah. And like you said, I can listen all day, but it's that actual implementation of that takes it to the next level and actually changes things. So whether they take that next step is the big question.
From a competitive standpoint, even if you wanted to go that road, what I look at is anytime I speak on a topic that would benefit my competitors in some aspect of whether it's just mentality or thoughts, I look at it as, look, if I'm teaching on it and I'm talking on it, and you're just learning it, you've got a ways to go before you can catch up to the level I'm at anyways, right? So in kind of what Mark was saying is, like, you're right. He could share sales tips and two out of every 10 people actually implement them. Well, one out of those two actually perfect it and execute it properly, right? So the likelihood that someone's just going to literally mimic what you say or what your company may or may not be doing is limited. Yeah, you see that in associations too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's that constant strive for being better and learning new things anyway, right? Like, yeah. if you rest on your laurels, somebody's going to catch you regardless of whether you say it or they hear it somewhere else. So, like, I'm happy to tell people what I'm doing now because I have, you know, 18 ideas about what I want to do tomorrow in my head that I'm moving towards, right? Like, it's a constant journey. You know, if I was sitting static and trying to teach people to get to where I was at, it'd be different than, you know, teaching people what I've historically done that works, even though I know I'm probably going to be doing something different in 6, 8, 12 months.
And you don't go back and update them on every revision you make since you last told them about it.
Yeah.
So, hey, Patrick, two questions I would have about, like, what are the benefits of a buying group over, you know, just a solid distributor?
Well, I mean, we actually have distributors that are part of the group.
Okay.
So obviously the lines get a little blurred there. But there are a couple that actually have been benefiting fairly well. Now, you know, where they see value is particularly now in this previous, you know, pandemic and the previous year that we just went through, it's a different way to engage with the integrators themselves. So it's not just an RSM calling on an engineer, you know, it's
right.
All of our contacts within the manufacturer and distributor is, you know, kind of up there in the VP or C level. And then the same with our members is the same thing. It's the VPs or the C levels or the owners of the businesses. So it's connecting on a different level, for the distributors and manufacturers. You know, it's just a different way to build those relationships. And it's more, like I said, the relationship building as opposed to them pushing product. And it's just the fact that, you know, in those conversations that products may come up or, you know, those types of scenarios, but it's more just building those relationships and then the products will come second.
So is there a threshold at which you guys look at when companies apply or they want to become part of that group? Do you say, no, you're too big? We're here for the little guy.
We've never really said that. To be honest, the bigger guys really aren't even interested. They're kind of the mindset is, you know, we can do this ourselves kind of thing, which is fine. You know, and you know, we like I said, we were founded to help the small and medium sized guys compete with the bigger guys. And it has worked out pretty well so far. But you know, we do try and find the right, you know, we're not going to just pick up any company off the street and just bring them part of the group. That there are certain requirements that we do have them, you know, meet from an eligibility standpoint.
Right. I'm trying to get a better, we're like our company, we're not part of a buying group. So I don't have much experience with them. So trying to get understanding of how does that work? As far as a buying group and kind of the mandate it would have is, okay, we're going to have a handful of, this is what I envision. We're going to have a handful of, on the product side, we're going to have a handful of products. We're going to go to those manufacturers and say, hey, we're going to bring you as an approved product into our network. And then that's what we're going to promote. Is that kind of, and the idea is that all, however many hundreds or thousands of members that you have across North America, the point is that everyone contributes to that purchasing goal of that product line. Is that kind of the realm that you're in?
Yeah, basically, you know, we have, I want to say 34 lines, or if you will, you know,
right.
And yeah, the goal is that if you're part of the group that you're purchasing those lines, as opposed to purchasing other lines that are competitors to those lines that are outside the group. Right. And we have, you know, quarterly targets with those manufacturers and distributors from a volume perspective, that the idea is the more purchases in that quarter, the bigger the discount or the rebate, if you will. And we try and have what we call best in breed, you know, manufacturers and distributors. That way it's the ones that our integrators are going to be purchasing from or want to purchase from, it, not just, you know, run of the mill, JVAB products that you can get from China, you know?
Right. Okay. I like
it. Yeah. That, I mean, for us, Jared, and I know, like being a member of a buying group a couple times, you know, it's that, that curated mix of product. And I think that's another thing that the buying group can kind of do for you, right? Is they curate kind of a group of products that they know are work well together.
Yeah.
And, you know, bring all those categories to you. So you don't really have to go, you know, outside the group for a lot of what you're doing, you know, you know, they make sure that they have products across those different kind of technical capabilities of the business. So, and then I think, you know, obviously the discounts and things help coming back too. So Patrick, different question.
Sure.
You know, you weren't on the phone yet, so you weren't privy to Jared and I's, you know, pre-show conversation. But I noticed on Twitter, and maybe you changed it. I don't know if you did. I don't think you did. Your handle was the Duke of Music.
That's right.
Are you music royalty?
So when I was 13, I decided I wanted to start a disc jockey business.
Okay.
And I still am a big Duke basketball fan. So my dad at the time came up with, well, why don't you call your DJ business the Duke of Music?
There you go.
And so that's where the name, and at first I was kind of like, I to be honest, I really didn't like the name, but it just kind of, I just stuck with it and it just grew. And I mean, I've pretty much stopped doing that now just because of my family life. But yeah, I had a DJ business for over 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Started out doing just regular, you know, little 13-year-old birthday parties, you know, with a couple of CD players, and grew that into, like, you know, doing proms, and then grew that into doing weddings. And obviously weddings is where the money was at. And I mean, it was great. I was, you know, it got me through college, you know, bought my first couple of cars cash with that. And, you know,
wow.
It was
your first 1993 Chevy Astro. Is that what you said?
it was a
free ride.
It was a 94 Ford Explorer.
Oh, okay. I was close.
Yeah, definitely.
So was that in New Jersey?
Yeah, it was New Jersey and Philadelphia.
Did you ever do a show with DJ Chris Netto?
I did not. I didn't know that Chris was a DJ, actually.
Oh, you didn't know that? No, I didn't know that. So
of course
Chris
he was.
Yeah, so that's always going to ask you the same thing. I'm like, who's the better New Jersey DJ? The Duke of Music or Chris Netto?
We need a spinoff. Oh, dude.
This is going to be the next trade show. We're getting two turntables and a microphone.
There we go.
Not in the figurative sense, but in the literal sense. And we are putting Chris Netto and Patrick Wipke in a spinoff. I like this, Jared. I like this idea.
Before we go down a dark path of DJs and et cetera, I do have a question about, because you would think that as with your position, Patrick, you would have a general idea of how the market is kind of moving and shifting and what your members are seeing and doing within the US, especially during the pandemic. So can you speak to, have you seen over the last 900 years of this pandemic, a shift in the technology that is being taken out? Are you seeing a shift in what your clients are starting to specialize in, or your members rather? What are you seeing changing or happening, if anything at all?
Yeah, sure. So from a market perspective, you know, government, healthcare, they're still spending, they're still doing their projects like they always have. And typically those project timelines are a lot longer and they're already, you know, kind of in the queue.
Yeah.
So those segments have been strong. Obviously corporate is down. Education has been up because of CARES Act and you know, education trying to pivot and convert what they normally have and augment the technology that they have and add in that, you know, that virtual flavor now. So that has been a big growth segment. We are anticipating the back to the office, you know, kind of fire hose opening up, if you will, essentially. Sure. Yep. And you know, we're hearing all of our integrators now are working with their end clients on getting proposals together and how to, you know, add the technology to those huddle rooms that just have a display, for example, or how to take those meeting rooms and add the virtual aspect to them. That those are in the process right now, but the end user has not been cutting POs to the integrator yet because they just don't know when that back to work line in the sand is. But obviously, yeah, we are seeing a lot of the, you know, cameras, audio going out now rather than just staying in the room. All of that, and companies trying to figure out how to use what they already have and just kind of add on a couple of pieces and or parts to make what they currently have work because budgets are obviously slashed. So they're trying to do it on a budget, but still create this virtual experience that they know that their, you know, employees are going to be used to now just from being working from home and that kind of thing. We're also seeing, you know, because there's a bunch of our members who have furniture divisions as well. So, you know, how can they come at it as a holistic approach now, as opposed to just, hey, I'm going to sell you this USB camera and this microphone for your huddle space. You know, let's talk about people counting. Let's talk about air quality sensing. Let's talk about, you know, density in the space. Also, let's talk about sound masking because, you know, when everybody does go back to work, it's going to be at what, 25%, 50%. So it's going to be a lot quieter in there. So you're going to have to, you know, just like the NFL does, pump in crowd noise. You're going to have to pump in some, you know, some white noise just to offset that quietness that people aren't going to be used to.
Some booing. Is that what you said? Some cheering and booing going on in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it sounds like you have a positive outlook on everyone is kind of dangling on that head back to the office. All those POs need to get cut, but the restricted budgets obviously are leaving people kind of in a holding pattern. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And we do know that the office environment is going to change. You know, people aren't going to be in there 5 days a week or wanting to go back to the office 5 days a week. You know, we're seeing lots of surveys go out, not only internally, but also, you know, with our integrators and clients and they're surveying their employees to see when they want to come back and all that. You know, a large majority are saying, yes, we want to come back, but it's 1, 2, maybe 3 days a week. And the whole reason that they want to go back to the office is specifically to collaborate.
You know, because they have kids at home.
Well, or just to get away from their house. Yeah. But, yeah. You know, those sit down, just, you know, one-on-one meetings, they can do via Zoom at their home, but it's more getting people together and collaborating and just getting out of their house. That's what people want.
Well, it's interesting that Jared said, or I think Jared said, away from their kids. You know, a lot of the data that I saw on this was actually, you know, millennials without kids, a lot of them are actually craving getting back into an office too, because a lot of them are kind of like in co-housing situations, right? If you share a house or an apartment or something like that with roommates, you may have a bedroom, but you don't have like an open office space that you can just be in with other people not walking through being there as well. And right. So, you know, sometimes just that level of not, you know, being a homeowner yet, or you're still working towards a house with a room that's dedicated, that they just don't have dedicated space within their living quarters. And everything else is closed, you know? So like for me, Starbucks was my go-to second choice. I can't go sit in a Starbucks, right? And I'm in California, I could sit outside, a lot of cars and people and stuff running by for noise. You guys are in places where you would not sit outside a Starbucks right now with your laptop, you know? So, you know, I think, you know, these choices of other places to go have started to dwindle. Even for people that traditionally haven't worked in the office a lot. Like I was a regional sales manager for, you know, two different companies for over the course of 8 years. You know, I didn't go into an office every day. I went to a corporate meeting twice a year in an office across the country, whether it was in Minnesota or whether it was in Atlanta. And the rest of the time was me figuring out where I was going to work on my own. There was no local office to go to, even if I wanted to. So, you know, that is, for me, it was kind of an interesting fact that you think about people with kids or people with, but a lot of times it's just people that just don't have that dedicated space and do live with other people, even if they're not have children yet. So it's pretty crazy. Patrick, when you said like the waiting for to go back to work, that you see the corporate coming, I've had a couple of thoughts on this myself. I guess I'll just bounce them off of you guys because I think they're helpful in general to anybody who works in the industry that's reliant on corporate, whether it's new construction or TI work. You know, I've talked and seen a lot of companies that are starting to consolidate office spaces, right? They have three or four offices and they say, well, guess what? We don't need three or four offices anymore. We're going to go to one. But they don't have to be within 20 minutes of somebody's house now. They can be within an hour because we're only requiring people to come in maybe once a week, or, you know, it's something they can use when they want to. So the commute can be a little longer because it's not a daily effort. You know, they're looking at ways to kind of, I guess, reduce their overhead costs on real estate. I see that as a plus and a minus. And this is where I guess I want you guys, I mean, what I'm seeing, like when I think about this, I'm seeing a small bump initially in some of those projects, because people are going to be doing tenant improvements. They're going to be changing around the space that they have, and they're going to need some things to fill the gaps to make that space, that consolidated space or the space that they move to, good enough for what they're doing. But are we really going to see the full impact of what new construction projects would typically do? You know, I'm seeing, like in my head, my doomsday scenario is we see this small bump, then we see a 6 to 9 month pause while people figure out the rest of their leases, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, next year really have a full, you know, corporate real estate, I guess, strategy on how their organization looks going forward. Because right now it seems to be a lot of stopgap and less, you know, long-term strategy. What are your thoughts on that?
You want me to go first or you want Jared?
Doesn't matter. It's something I've thought about, and I talked to a couple consultants too, even with the new projects that were going, you know, and they were saying, you know, like, well, you know, in consulting, we're always spending yesterday's money. This money was allocated for a project. And
right.
At some point today's money has to come through. And if people aren't lining up those new projects, we're going to see an air bubble. And how big is that air bubble? Is it 3 months? Is it 6 months? Is it 9 months? Is it a year? You know, so I'm optimistic that we will see a bump soon, but I don't know how long that's going to last or how big of a peak that's going to give us before we see the second kind of valley.
I can jump on this.
Yeah.
Pat, and then Patrick, you can correct me after that.
Yeah, so, that works.
you know, the conversations I've had have been that everyone is holding any budget they do currently have pretty tight to the chest, especially with a lack of planning from administrative offices, right? I know, like in Canada, it's been really hard to, I think other than the government and kind of that municipal level and provincial level and our state level for you guys, they can spend away, right? Because they've got the money, the projects were already approved, the budget's allocated. Any new funds, they're kind of, I think if anything, people in a position where they have the money, they just don't know what to do with it. I think that's because they haven't seen what the return to office looks like. They have the reports that Patrick spoke about. The 30 to 40% are returning, you know, most are going to be 20 to 40% at the office. What does that look like? And no one knows. The people that don't have the money necessarily because of, you know, business implications that the pandemic has given them or for other obvious reasons. I think everyone is kind of just sitting and there. I don't think any government has released any definitive plan of actually, hey, effective this date, effective this case count, you know, we're all back at the office. Everything's going to open up. Here we go. And I think that's what we're missing. I think the vaccinations, the announcement of those and those coming in will start loosening up the purse strings, if you will. And hopefully you see that. But the biggest problem, I think, like you talked about, Mark, the biggest problem is without that, any suggestion of a reference of time, that bubble is just growing and growing, like you said, until people, all of a sudden it just opens wide up and everyone's back at the office and everyone needs this or that. So people need a reference. That's, to me, it's the biggest thing hanging in the air is a reference of time.
Yeah.
To
touch on that, you know, I think that you're right that there is that need, you know, initially to get people back to the office and fix what they have and make that stuff work. But there's so many businesses out there and so many different markets that it will be a roller coaster, but I don't think it's going to be like a big dip and, you know, there's not going to be that peak and valley. I think it's going to be more, you know, leveled out a little bit. You know, different market segments will pop and others will drop and then the others will come up. I think, yes, there will be some dips, but I don't think it will be anything that substantial that will really hurt the integrators, for example, and the manufacturers.
Yeah. So it sounds like, I mean, it sounds like just with anything, I mean, it's going to be extremely important to keep your eyes open. You know, watch market trends, watch different verticals, make sure that your company is diverse enough and servicing enough that if one dies, that it doesn't kill your business.
That's key, the diversification. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
That. Which is hard because I, you know, from someone that runs an integration company, we've spent the last few years trying not to be diverse and specialized in fields, right? And then all of a sudden you get hit where exactly for the reason you wanted to stay diversified before, now you have to go back to going, okay, no, now we do this vertical and this vertical and this vertical because we kind of have to collect whatever we can, right? So what did, going back to, you were saying that USAV, you guys also, one of your primary is actually to kind of create that network and that development side for your members. And so what trend of topic or what trend of, webinars and discussions did you guys kind of pivot to when, other than the obvious, hey, there's a pandemic, you know, but what did you guys kind of do to start tailoring to the members to kind of give them ideas or insight into how things were going?
Yeah, so typically in normal days, USAV would host meetings couple times throughout the year in person. You know, we'd all go to certain locations. We typically would be once in the spring, once in the fall, and then at InfoComm. You know, those were kind of the standard three meetings a year where everyone would come together and we talk about different topics. Last March, when everything got shut down, we kind of had to, you know, figure out a different way to keep everyone engaged, connected, and still sharing best practices, what they're seeing. So just organically, we started doing these, you know, town hall roundtables where we would you know, invite everyone, you know, together via Zoom for an hour, hour and a half. We would just pick a topic, you know, and some of it would be, you know, pandemic related, whether it was the PPP loans or the tax laws or HR, you know, different things that our integrators were actively dealing with. And we would bring on some subject matter experts in those fields to help them navigate those waters. And we would, you know, get them all together to pick a topic, talk about it a little bit, send everyone in breakouts, and then they could, you know, in smaller groups, have those bigger discussions and talk about how they're each individually doing and how they're facing these, you know, obstacles, and then bring back the whole group and do like a share back and talk about what each learned. That just kind of grew organically. We did one in March, we did one in, you know, it actually started to be, you know, almost bi-weekly because everyone was getting so much information. Yeah. As the, you know, the information was free flowing with the pandemic and what was going on. But then as summer came through and people started, you know, opening up a little bit, then we then moved that to once a month. And that kind of has stayed the cadence now. And we're continuing to do that once a month, just bring everyone together, pick a topic and, you know, do an overall group share, then break out and get more, you know, granular with it, and then come back and share back to talk about what everyone has learned. That has really kept, you know, our members together, much more engagement, you know, as opposed to just the two meetings a year and everyone goes and does their own thing. It's been really cool to see and interact. And now we're also seeing more engagement outside of those town hall meetings, you know, with just other members, you know, calling up one another and say, hey, you know, I got this problem, but what can you do? Where before it was a lot less of that. So the engagement level is certainly up a lot more. So while people do want to meet in person and go do those happy hours and do different team buildings and learning, we certainly have had the ability to still connect with one another via Zoom and or Microsoft Teams or whatever, and still share those ideas and best practices.
Yeah. Yeah. First experience is the best. Is the best type of information.
Yeah, and Jared, yeah, because and sorry. Go ahead, Patrick.
Okay. I was just gonna say the nice thing is with so many different members throughout the country, and even we have a couple in Canada. You know, we're getting different perspectives from everyone that normally just within your own little organization you wouldn't see those outside of perspectives. So it really helps kind of show everybody what's actually going on.
Yeah. And you sent, I'm connected, Jared. So I have an invite to one of these roundtables actually in front of me. But just the resources you guys send out ahead of time, you know, for these are really good. I mean, like the one you sent me today, it has, you know, some return to workplace playbook from a commercial real estate firm. It has the kind of like the global travel barometer to show you where, you know, countries have travel restrictions and things like that. So, you know, which countries might be opening up more and which ones might not. You know, it has a state of the industry report to show kind of what the peer groups think 21 is going to look like based on their, you know, their market optimism and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you guys do a good job of curating some content, give people some data points, that way they can look through things and then, you know, discuss pieces individually if they want to too, which is really cool. Cause I think for a lot of people, you know, there's so much going on out there to have a list of two or three instead of Googling, you know, return to workplace and seeing 150 different, you know, pieces, to have something relevant sent to you by a group or somebody who's kind of looked at it is very, very helpful. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what do you think, Mark? Have we gone on too long?
No, I think we're right where we need to be. I have to return to this idea though, of this spinoff. How are we pulling this off? So, I mean, I don't know if we can recreate the dead mouse, you know, like Cube of Death or whatever that guy has for his DJ shows, but we have got, Jared, we have got to work with somebody we know at Infocom, whether it's Barb or somebody, to get a space outside the hall in Orlando.
I mean, if we just opened up, can you imagine this? Could you imagine an open invite to all former DJs at Infocom? It'd be like the Comic-Con for DJs. Like it would get ridiculous. That's
pretty much. Yeah. And obviously anybody in our business has some sort of musical background, whether it's guitar or drums, or that's how everyone has come into this industry, right? So that, yeah, whether you're a DJ or you know, playing a band, I feel like the line is quite long there.
Yes.
I'm going to blow both your minds right now, as I don't have a musical or a DJ background. I'm one of the rare people that did not come here through a failed music career. Is that what we call it?
Yeah, I learned the guitar after being in AV. It's like,
and actually, in all fairness, Patrick, you ran a DJ business for 20 years, so I don't know if you consider that failed, but no. That sounds pretty successful to me. So
I think one of my most popular memes though on Twitter was a picture of like a band and some roadies, and it said audio visual because your band sucked. Right. So I was like,
yeah.
I was even thinking like, I'd love to do it just me and Chris via Zoom, you know, we could do like a DJ happy hour, but I've done a couple of those, you know, back in the spring, and because of the copyright protection, it just gets shut down because you're streaming the.
Right.
Yes. You can't do that.
No,
you can't do that.
You have to stream only your original hits.
Yes.
Yes.
which I have zero of.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, hey, Patrick, thanks so much for coming and joining us. Your ability to kind of zoom out and talk about kind of like the aerial is very helpful, I think, for most people. And like Jared said, we're all looking for people to lead and just share their expertise. So it was really awesome of you to come on and share some of that.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was great, you know, talking with you guys.
Yeah. So if somebody is looking for USAV, where do they go?
Website is usavgroup.net.
Okay. Awesome.
Or you can reach out to me via Twitter at the Duke of Music.
at the Duck of Death.
or they could just go to LinkedIn route, I'm sure, and you're on there too, probably.
Yes.
I'm on LinkedIn. And every day, so yeah. Patrick, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Patrick Whiskey with a P.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks everybody for joining us. Hopefully, you got something out of today's Daybreak, and we will see you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.